Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You could build, quilting would be an answer.
We could crowdsource it then.
Yeah, everybody does their own little piece of it.
And also like a global project to block out the sun? I've never heard a better idea.
Welcome back to Dead Planet Society from New Scientist. I'm Leah Crane.
And I'm Chelsea White.
This episode, we are blocking out the sun. You heard me right, we're not killing it this time, just blocking it from view.
So here's the thing. I missed the last two total solar eclipses that happened in the U.S.
Yeah, I missed totality for the most recent one, too, although I did get to see it in 2017.
And was it incredible?
Yeah, it was absolutely bonkers. It was one of the most incredible things I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people, but it's also just incredibly inconvenient. I was out of the country for the one in 2017, and the most recent one, I wasn't feeling all that well, so I couldn't really travel to see it. So I was thinking, what if we made the eclipse come to us instead of having to wait around for it?
Yeah, sort of constant solar eclipse.
Of the heart, yes.
Yep. Scientists solve that sort of inconvenience problem by using something called a coronagraph, which creates a sort of artificial eclipse inside a telescope by just blocking out the sun.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes me think we need to define what we mean by an eclipse, because if we're taking that as an example, then I guess I could like put up an umbrella and hold it the right way and create a total solar eclipse.
Yeah, or you could hold up your hand to block the sun. Close your eyes. That's an eclipse, you know. Turn around, as the song says. That's an eclipse by your head.
Yeah, so not quite what I had in mind. I really want something that will actually block the sun in space, that will make an eclipse more regularly than just once in a while.
Yeah, maybe even every day, if we can swing it.
That'd be cool. And to help bring the eclipse to the people, we spoke to astronomer Bruce McIntosh at UC Santa Cruz.
Eclipses are awesome, A, because you get to stand there and see the eclipse, which is like one of the most amazing experiences human beings can have. But B, they're the only way we can, used to be the only way to really study the corona of the sun, the big outer fluffy layers around it, which are actually kind of important. It turns out we don't really understand why the corona of the sun is so hot. And 100 years ago, we didn't even understand what it was made out of.
So let's take this one thing at a time. Is there a way we could imagine to make a constant eclipse, which means that at any time on the planet, there is an eclipse and we know where it will be?
Yeah, if you put a giant sunshade in like low Earth orbit around the Earth, it would trail an eclipse across the surface of the Earth. But that eclipse would last for like 5 seconds and only people. And you'd have to know, look at your watch and say, run out, see the eclipse, run back home.
All that done. Does seem kind of cool though.
Yeah, that's probably a good first step, right? Is you put something 1,000 kilometers up from the surface of the Earth, and so it would have to only be 10 kilometers across, which hardly an engineering challenge at all. Yeah,
that seems doable.
It's like a good proof of concept.
And it would go around the Earth again and again and again, and its shadow would kind of trail across the surface of the Earth, go around the Earth every 90 minutes. The shadow might be 100 meters across. So yeah, you'd run out of your office when it's eclipse time. And we could probably move it like north and south so that day after day after day, sometimes, you know, different latitudes would get their eclipse. And so you'd know what eclipse day was and you could set your watch for it. And
I like that.
Pretty rad, actually.
Yeah.
I know that that's the small version, but it seems pretty awesome.
It's a good first step, I think. Yeah. So you kind of want something that orbits the sun, goes around once a year like we do, so it stays lined up. But that's generally tricky, because to go around the sun once a year, you want to be in the Earth's orbit. And if you put the thing ahead or behind the Earth in the Earth's orbit, it doesn't block the sun. What's the point? But there's five places where you can put something in the solar system and it will stay locked to the Earth. They're named after a French math guy, like a lot of things in the field. They're called Lagrange points, and they're kind of places where the Earth and the sun's gravity balances so that you can stay fixed with respect to the Earth and the sun.
So these are like little sort of wells, little divots, I guess, if you want to think about them that way, where something can settle in and not be perturbed out of that space.
Yes. Some of them are like little wells that you sit in. Some of them are more like being balanced exactly on the top of a hill. So you can stay in the same place. You can think of the Earth and the sun's gravity as this big landscape of hills. And there are some places that are valleys. And if you have a tennis ball, it rolls down into the valley and stays there. The two that are like that are called the fourth and the fifth Lagrange points. One of them is ahead of the Earth in its orbit. One of them is behind the Earth in its orbit. Great places to park space stations, terrible for blocking the sun because they're in the wrong way. The other ones, one of them is on the far side of the Earth, is you go sun, Earth, Lagrange point. One of them is on the opposite side of the Earth from the sun. That's the number two Lagrange point. It's full of telescopes right now, so you wouldn't want to put something there anyway because it would crash into all the telescopes. I like telescopes. And of course, if you're sitting there, you do get a nice eclipse because the Earth blocks the sun. So if you could like put a travel resort there among all the telescopes and people could visit it.
I just had a really, really, really bad idea, which is you could put a big mirror there.
Oh, I like that.
That's the opposite of constant eclipse. Daytime all the time.
Daytime forever.
Yeah.
And no, thank you.
Yeah, again, number of life on Earth issues confusing to birds, but
yeah, they would all go for it.
It could be a good place to put it. There's another one that's on that no one ever uses, that's on the opposite side of the sun from the Earth. So you go Earth, sun, Lagrange point, way, way, way out here. And no obvious use for it, and like except for like sneaking up on the Earth, like if you're an alien and you want to park a spaceship where the humans can't see it. Opposite side from the sun, obvious place to put one. So there might well be alien spaceships parked there. We don't really know because the sun gets in the way. We can't see it. Then the last of them, the one that's useful for our sinister purposes, is the number one Lagrange point, which is between the Earth and the sun. So there's one of these Lagrange points is about 1.5 million kilometers towards the sun. And right there, you get a little bit of extra tug from the Earth's gravity that offsets the fact that you're slightly too close to the sun to be orbiting at a normal speed. And you can go around once a year, just like the Earth does, and stay locked with respect to the Earth.
And is there anything there already that we need to destroy?
There's a few satellites that'll get in the way. It's a popular place to put satellites that look at the sun because the Earth doesn't get in your way. So I think there's a couple of solar telescopes.
Wait, so if we park something big enough to cause a total eclipse at L1, would that cause a constant total eclipse over the entire Earth anytime the sun is up?
Yeah, I was trying to do the math for this a little bit. The last thing I just wanted to say about these sort of divots or hills is that the L1 place is one of the places that's more like being balanced on the top of a hill. And so there is a problem that whatever you park there, this is a problem for the space telescopes too, will risk falling off and drifting away unless it's got rockets so it can kind of balance itself back on the top of the hill periodically. And for a space telescope, that's a mild problem. That's ultimately what's going to happen to James Webb. It's going to run out of fuel and it won't be able to stay balanced on the top of its hill anymore in 20 years. For something as big as we're about to talk to that blocks out the entire sun, if it runs out of fuel and falls off the top of the hill, there's some chance it'll fall off the top of the hill towards the Earth and crash into us. So there's an end game issue about how we dispose of this thing. But
also we could go with a very looming total eclipse coming. Like, the closer it gets to us, the less of the sun we're going to see. Right. So,
you don't block
seems
out.
Like
you
a problem for future generations.
Good answer. So, very good.
Suckers.
Good science-y answer. Are we allowed to do math in these things?
Yes, of course.
Okay. There's actually a really handy fact about the sun, which is the sun is about half a degree across, as you see it from the Earth in size, like the size of your fingernail. Half a degree is a hundredth. I'm an astronomer, so I do math very badly. Half a degree is a hundredth of a radian, which means the size of something that blocks the sun is 1% of how far away it is from you.
Okay.
So, for example, for the version we were talking about earlier where it sweeps across the Earth and it's 1,000 kilometers up, that's how I knew it had to be 10 kilometers across. It's a hundredth of the distance to the thing that you're putting it. So this Earth-Sun L1 point is 1.5 million kilometers away. And so the size of our giant sun blocker has to be 1% of that, which is 15,000 kilometers across, which is, you know, it's not crazy. That's only like a planet. It's not like it has to be.
Only.
Which it's not Jupiter. It's a nice, discrete, reasonable sized planet. A little bit bigger than the Earth, I think.
No, Leah and I think have just said which planet at the same time, which I think means like maybe it's easier not to build it and just get a planet there.
We're putting Venus at L1.
Venus is a little too small, which is irritating.
That is irritating.
We're smashing Mercury into Venus in order to move the final thing to L1. We're using Mercury as a billiard ball to push Venus to L1.
It could be. I think I'd rather, Neptune irritates me. So you could also take Neptune and strip away its atmosphere. Or Uranus irritates me because you have to put up with a stupid joke. So you could take Neptune and strip away its atmosphere, strip away just enough. Like Neptune's easy. It's easier to shrink things than to build them, right? So like shrink Neptune, like just bullet or Uranus, just erode away enough of their atmosphere and stop when it gets to be the right size.
Would putting either of those this close to the sun naturally strip some of their atmosphere?
It wouldn't be hot. It would take a long time to.
Okay, well, then we'll have to get some
like
cosmic hairdryer or something.
Or move it really close to the sun, broil it for a while, the atmosphere erodes away, and then move it back when you're done.
Perfect.
Yeah. And then we only need one magic power, and that's planetary.
The magic power to move giant planets wherever you want them. so if you put something there and it's just exactly 15,000 kilometers across, it would make. So there's a really important point about. Any big project, you should agree on your requirements. What do we want? Like, we don't want to block, like almost blocking the sun. I mean, you've been to real eclipses, right?
I don't want an annual eclipse.
I have not.
Eclipse.
Have you?
I have been to a total eclipse. One, so, the 2017 one you mentioned.
So Leo had two. So tell us about it because I did not get to see that one.
The difference between, you also get partial eclipses or annual eclipses, and maybe you have been to some of those. And you think, oh, that's kind of cool, partial eclipse, the sun got fainter. Or, you know, you get weird shadows, or if you have glasses, you can look at them and see that there's a bite out of the sun. So I've been to lots of partial and annual eclipses. I thought I knew what I was getting into with the total eclipse, and I did. The total eclipse is just beyond indescribably so much cooler than the partial ones. The difference between a little bit of the sun being out is like it's like 6 p.m. dark versus whole sun is blocked and it's completely dark. And that corona thing you can only see when there's a total eclipse and it's this beautiful gossamer mysterious structure up there. So really got to do a total eclipse. It's not worth blowing up a planet to get a partial eclipse.
Yeah, I agree. I had the same experience. I thought it would be cool. It was incredible. I felt a primal visceral fear because the sun was gone. It was some sort of evolutionary something. And I think everyone should experience that.
That's the right answer, yeah.
So we need to have, it has to be a perfect total solar eclipse. I think an annular eclipse, which is where the moon covers not all of the sun, there's a ring around it. That's just not cool enough. Yeah, the total eclipse is really, if we're going through all this effort.
Exactly, yeah. But on the other hand, you can't have it be too big because I think you do want to see that corona. The corona is one of the prettier things involved in there. I think you do want to be able to see the corona. So that's why we can't just use Neptune and Uranus the way they are right now. They would block out too much of the sun and you wouldn't be able to see the corona thing. So we do have to whittle them down to be the right size.
That seems, in context, easy. Yeah. Comparatively.
Comparatively speaking. Well, I have two alternative technological solutions to this we'll get to if planets turn out to be too hard.
I am curious about if we put something at L1, where on Earth is this eclipse going to be visible? Is it going to be like still moving around in the same way that the eclipse does?
It'll move differently. So we do have a little bit of a knob to turn to how big we can make the shadow. You can kind of picture the shadow as like a cone coming towards the surface of the Earth. The bigger the thing we're blocking the sun with is, the bigger the patch of shadow is on the surface of the Earth, but the more of the sun you block out. So if we oversize this by 10%, you'll still see lots of corona, and the shadow might be 1,000 kilometers across on the surface of the Earth. So
cool.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Doesn't do the whole Earth. If you you'd have to oversize it by make it twice as big as you wanted to do to block the whole Earth, and then everybody would get it, but you'd get less of a good corona view. So I'd argue against that given the choice.
That would just be, it would be nighttime all the time, basically.
There's the whole, for all of these, there's the whole ending all life on Earth problem that you know, turns out sunlight, all these plants like it. So probably we want some.
Really unfortunate, isn't it? I'm also
gonna curse those plants. Why can't they learn to live without it? Why are they so needy?
I've also just realized that we're putting something significantly large at L1. Is that gonna mess up Earth's orbit?
Oh, that's bad. Yeah. All right. I hadn't thought about that's it. That's probably another requirement, is not destroy the Earth immediately, because we want people to experience the eclipse for at least a little while before we wander off. And yeah, if you put something as big as heavy as Venus at the L1 point, you're or Neptune or Uranus. That's another reason to use Neptune or Uranus. They're lower density than Venus is.
But this does get us back to the argument for perhaps some kind of star shade that is not made of a planet.
So just to finish on where people see it, wherever we put it, what would happen is it would cast a shadow on the point between the Earth and the Sun. Earth is still rotating. Mm-hmm. So at sunrise and sunset, you probably wouldn't be in that shadow. It's as you come around to kind of noon, then you're on the line where the shadow is located. So you'd get a few hours of eclipse wherever you are on the Earth.
Cool.
Every day, kind of at noon or so, and you could have a nap or whatever.
Yeah, still have sunrises and sunsets and eclipse siesta time.
Yeah, it's a pretty good combo.
I love this.
The birds will figure it out eventually, right?
Yeah, they'll learn. And if they don't, sorry, birds.
Yes, tough evolutionary.
Hashtag sorry, birds.
Now we have a special offer for Dead Planet Society listeners. You can get a 10-week digital subscription for $10 or £10, which includes unlimited access to our website and app. To learn more, go to newscientist.com/DPS offer.
And if you enjoy our podcast, you might also enjoy my free monthly space newsletter at New Scientist, Launchpad. Check it out at newscientist.com/launchpad.
We also have an exciting new event series launching in the U.S. Join us in New York City on June 22nd for a full-day masterclass exploring cutting-edge research on the mind and consciousness. You'll hear 6 talks from leading neuroscientists and philosophers about some of the biggest questions out there. When does consciousness begin? How does our brain create conscious perception? And what role do dreams play in our conscious experience? To learn more, visit newscientist.com/newyorkmind.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, yeah, the orbit thing is now starting to worry me, and I'm not enough of an orbit specialist to know how much mass you could put there before the Earth's orbit. Or if you could you find a different location where it's a little further away or a little closer to balance the fact that it's messing up the Earth's orbit? And I have a bad feeling you can't with anything that's at a reasonable size. So we should build something lightweight, which is what humans are good at. So, so we're back to building still 15 million kilometers across a giant sunshade. Or you could build one 15,000 kilometer across giant sunshade, or you could build 100 quadrillion 1 meter across giant sunshades, tiny sunshades.
Everybody start knitting.
In a giant swarm.
Swarm. Like a quilt. I love a swarm.
You could build, quilting would be an answer.
We could crowdsource it then.
Yeah, everybody does their own little piece of it.
And then we could get societal buy-in for our experiment.
And also, like, a global project to block out the sun? I've never heard a better idea.
Somebody actually wrote about, an actual astronomer, Roger Angel, who works on mirrors, actually wrote about this a little bit, maybe 10 or 20 years ago, I want to say, as a global warming thing. Like, you don't block the whole sun, but how much would it cost to... His version were glass panels that would orbit between the Earth and the sun, and so they'd absorb a little bit of the sunlight and get the temperature down. It was kind of a thought experiment. Like, if you really wanted to preserve plant life on Earth for some reason, because you're sentimental about plants or you want to eat them or whatever, they don't need all the sunlight, right? Photosynthesis doesn't use every wavelength of light the sun emits. I feel like it mostly uses the blue light, but I am an astronomer, so I could be completely wrong. Let's pretend it's blue for purposes of this conversation. So you could make the panels out of colored glass so that they absorb the green and red light and let the blue light through. And then when you want to get an eclipse, you put on your red-green glasses so that you see that at some colors the sun is eclipsed and at other colors the sun isn't eclipsed.
That's
kind of
incredible.
Gives people a little too much determination. It makes the eclipse less mandatory for people, so I don't like that as much.
It does, but it also, that means that we're putting like the most incredible, beautiful stained glass window in space.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The biggest piece of art ever made. I kind of like that.
So my version would be, you have, the 100 quadrillion thing is a bit of a problem, but you have 100 quadrillion of them. In my head, they're a meter across. Maybe they're 10 meters across. In my head, they're hexagonal because I like hexagons. But maybe hexagons are naturally cooler than squares.
They're the best.
It's just a rule. And they're all orbiting there, and they all have little thrusters and gyros on them. And you have a switch, so you can tell them to tilt this way. They're like a window blind.
Yes.
And you could say, tilt them a little bit, and then they block out a percent of the sunlight and help cool the planet. And then when it's eclipse day, you push the button and they all go and tilt all the way around and you get
this
the eclipse.
This is incredible, Bruce.
Yeah.
Yes, it's like literally a shade, like a shade for your window that you can like open the slats and close them.
Exactly. And they're all moving, so they have to not collide with each other. And you have an assembly line on Earth and you have a giant star-shaped cannon that goes...
Like a maglev railgun?
Fires
gun?
Them off. Exactly, yeah. Some kind of...
like a semi-automatic maglev railgun.
Technology.
Space.
Right. Or big lasers. Big lasers, too. So, these, yeah.
Yeah, they could be sun sails, or they could be laser sails on this side.
That's part of how you do the kind of navigation. Actually, you might not need rocket fuel. Yeah, if you put them shiny on one side, then solar radiation pressure kind of gives them some thrust. And so as they tilt themselves... Or they turn around and put their black side on, you could control how much thrust they get from the sun. So they wouldn't run out of fuel, which is great because then they won't crash into the Earth and destroy all life on the Earth when they
how
when
do
they
we
do run
stop
out of fuel.
Them when they get to L1 though?
Same, yeah. I think you launch them
just
towards L1 sideways. You're kind of going upwind.
Frisbee.
Frisbee mode. I like frisbee mode. And then they get to L1 and they tilt. And now they're a solar sail, and so the reflection off the sun slows them down and stops them. You tell the swarm to be in climate mode, and they tilt themselves a little bit, and you only get 1%. And then maybe we wouldn't have an eclipse every moment because it would get boring, but we'd have eclipse day.
Yeah, that's the thing I was thinking about with the last idea is that if there's an eclipse every noon, you know, maybe a year in, you're sort of like, all right, I've seen
oh,
it.
Oh, it's a damn eclipse.
Yeah, I'm going to nap
lunch.
Through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so this it would be configurable. We could
have like a holiday, eclipse day,
whenever we wanted.
Well, sure.
Yeah, convenient days.
I also kind of am picturing it like if everyone's getting out of hand, like you remember how the teacher used to flash the light bulbs on the wall, like just like turn the sun off for a second, be like, hey everyone,
hey, don't make me push the swarm button here, kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't make me turn the sun off.
Sun's out. Quiet down now. Thanks for joining us for Dead Planet Society. If you want to catch up on previous episodes, head over to newscientist.com/deadplanets. And this season, we've got a lot of great stuff coming up for you. Look forward to new episodes every other Tuesday right here in the New Scientist feed.
And if anyone out there has a cosmic object you want us to figure out how to destroy, let us know and it could be featured in a later episode of the podcast. Our email is deadplanets@newscientist.com.
Bye.
Bye.
you're turning to this podcast for your safety tips, you have serious problems. So, all right, so we won't feel
that might not be
the smartest plan.
This podcast is produced by OG Podcasts. Find out more at ogpodcasts.co.uk.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.